Honored among America's most famous novelists, Ernest Hemingway told a lot of stories, but his life had a generous share of stories as well. Mary Dearborn is the author of a new biography titled simply Ernest Hemingway. It hit the shelves last month and is the first biography of Ernest Hemingway written by a female. She joins me now. Hi there, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Now, there are a number of firsts your publisher has identified about the book. One is that you're the first female biographer. The other is that this is the first look at some unearthed material. What's included in that material?
Well, when Hemingway and his wife had to flee Cuba in 1959 after Castro came in, they left in a hurry, and there were a lot of papers left there moldering in the basement. Everything else, too, his furniture, it was all his books. They were all given to the Cuban people, not willingly, I don't think. But those papers have slowly been coming out, or rather, they are now in this country, but they were being digitized immediately. His medical records are there in quite some detail. And his wife's papers, all of those are out now. Every piece of paper from the Finca Vigia, his Havana hilltop retreat, is now in this country, but they're all digitized, and there's a tremendous amount of new information in them.
Well, we're going to spend the next few minutes parsing out what you have learned that is new, but let's start with what you found in relation to how he became sort of a stereotype in his own lifetime. He became iconic while still living. That's something that doesn't usually happen until somebody has passed away. And it came almost immediately after A Sun Also Rises was published. Why do you think that occurred?
Well, he was already a legend in the 30s, but The Sun Also Rises, that had supposedly one writer joke that everybody was dropping out of college to sit on the left bank at cafes and wear berets after they read The Sun Also Rises. He had enormous charm, and he was in Paris, and he knew the whole expatriate community, and they just adored him. And this crept into the coverage of him. He was really one of the first celebrities. As early as 1935, I think, Vanity Fair published a page that was paper dolls of Ernest Hemingway, and the doll himself had a caveman's skin on with a club, and the outfits were of a bullfighter, a soldier, and a marlin fisherman. So that's pretty early to be made into a legend, enough of a legend that there are paper dolls made of you.
What was the source of his charisma? I mean, when he was in Paris as quite a young man, he was described as being the golden young man there. And people were often commenting on how charming and charismatic and gregarious he was. What was the source of that?
Well, he was enormously good looking, for one thing. If you see the pictures of him in the early 20s. But the looks obviously came from his family, and so did the charisma that went along with him. His mother was a really remarkable woman, multi-talented, with incredible energy. And she, like Hemingway, was said to, if she entered a room, she sucked all the air out of it. Everybody looked to her. And they were physically similar. She was quite bulky, not really overweight, but big, and he was massive in his 30s, 40s. And really, the charisma came from her. He was going to leave a mark. It was quite clear. He never considered that he wouldn't become a famous writer. So it's the self-confidence, a lot of energy, a lot of curiosity, and ability to make you feel like you were special. He was just really good one-on-one, not always so good if it was behind your back.
But since you mentioned his mother, Grace, Hemingway famously wrote about her, quote, "I hate her guts and she hates mine. She forced my father to suicide." He didn't attend her funeral. He didn't have a lot of love for his mother. How did that end up affecting his relationship, do you think, with other women? I mean, we're talking about a writer who's often used as an example of sexist.
Well, two things, really. One is that he did not hate his mother until late in life, and really until his father's suicide in 1928. And let's see, Hemingway was around then, 28, 29. And it was, and even so, he was in constant contact with her. He sent her money, he supported her, and so forth. But, and as a young boy, adolescent, and even as a young man, 18 or 19, he loved his mother. It was a very close-knit family. But his around that time, around when he was just after he came back from World War I around 1918, his mother had a lesbian affair with a girl who had been a sort of au pair in the Hemingway household. She'd been a voice student of Grace's. Grace taught voice. And the family really came apart at this. But after it threatened to fall apart. But after this incident, Grace went on to live with this woman for the rest of her life. Ernest, for example, was just fine with lesbians. In fact, he had a lifelong fondness for lesbians. And there are a whole range of them, from his sister-in-law to Gertrude Stein. And she's an interesting example because she looks a lot like Grace and Ernest, this same big, massive, and some of the same qualities. So I think that his early love for his mother persisted. And he felt it was incumbent on him to hate his mother more than I think he actually did.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with author Mary Dearborn. She's the author of a new biography about novelist Ernest Hemingway. The elephant in the room, not to quote any Ernest Hemingway stories, but the elephant in the room is his relationship with women. And that's what makes it remarkable that you, a female, are writing a biography of Ernest Hemingway, a man who has been loathed and loved by feminists. And I'll read some bits of quotes, the ones that have been the most offensive to feminists throughout the years. There's an early story he wrote called Soldier's Home, and a quote from that is, "When you were really ripe for a girl, you always got one. You didn't have to think about it." His third wife said, "A man must be a very great genius to make up for being such a loathsome human being." And the one quote that people seem to return to over and over was something he wrote about F. Scott Fitzgerald and his wife. He claimed that she ruined him, and he says at the end, "If you leave a woman, though, you probably ought to shoot her. It would save enough trouble in the end, even if they hanged you." What did you learn, or what do you think is the truth about Ernest Hemingway and his relationship to women?
I think those are great quotes to pull out, and they're very damning. And I think he was, women, the idea of women, a whole, you know, gender, did not offend him as much as I think those quotes imply. He was just kind of mean to people, and he was mean to his wives. And there's a reputation, he has a reputation as a womanizer. You know, he was married four times, and it goes along with being a sportsman, a fisherman, a macho legend. But he was not a womanizer, for example. I think that I have no way of knowing, but I would estimate that he slept with about six women maybe total in his lifetime. That's including the wives. I'm not defending him. He could be really awful to them, but he could also be really awful to anyone. And there's among sort of Hemingway student scholars, there's and a lot of readers, an accusation that he was unable to create believable female characters. And I don't think that's right. And I think that some of his stories, like Hill's Like White Elephants, which is about, seems to be about a young man, it's convincing the woman with him to have an abortion, there's a sensitivity in it that you don't find in a guy that has a blanket hatred of women. I don't think that that's his biggest failing, I'll put it that way.
So that begs the question, what is his biggest failing? Is it that you outline in your book a sort of simmering rage inside him and suggest that that may be a part of what drove him? It was that his failing?
I don't know. He didn't really, he didn't understand himself very well. And he acted inconsistently, and he would, one onlooker, Donald Ogden Stewart, said that, you know, sometimes he'd start treating you badly and it really wasn't anything. It was just a mood that he was in. And I think he was a really fascinating human being with a lot of good things about him. I admire him, even though I consider myself a feminist, but he was mean to people. And sometimes it seemed out of nowhere. And in fact, the people that he was meanest to were people who had helped him anyway. So I think that his treatment of women is all of a piece with that.
So how are we to reconcile the hyper-macho, masculine adventure man who went on all those safaris and walked on the balls of his feet in order to appear a couple inches taller, with the guy who wrote love letters that could only be described as squelchy? Baby talk, pillow talk, sweet nothings, pet names. He called them kitty cat and sweet feathered kitten.
Yes, he did.
How do we reconcile those two sides of him?
Well, the side of him that's macho and hyper male and a sportsman and a fisherman and so forth, that's not real. Or that's, he did a lot of those things, but the legend that sprang up really has very little to do with him. He was a really, okay, there, here's some of the better side of him. He was a really vulnerable, easily wounded, sensitive, new age guy. Not new age, but he was sensitive, and he could be very loving. This mean streak could come out of nowhere. Maybe Donald Ogden Stewart is right that it just happened when he was in a mood. I'm not saying you'd want to be married to him, though.
From all reports, being married to him was awful.
Well, for the first wife, it wasn't, and the first two wives, it really wasn't. Hadley, you know, he left Hadley, and he chose to make that into a terrible story. But they had been very happy, and his marriage to Pauline was really happy. In fact, it's a complicated marriage. She really gave up everything for him. But for his writing, that was her biggest priority, was to let him write. But then the third wife, Martha Gellhorn, came along and really stole Ernest away from Pauline. I mean, he had to have been ready to leave. But and then, no, he didn't treat Martha. Martha and he gave as good as they got to each other. And the fourth wife, Mary, was in the most unfortunate position because she really had to become his caretaker. And he got more abusive and mean as he got older and sicker.
Before we go, what is the fascination with Ernest Hemingway? Why are we still writing biographies about him and studying him and doing documentaries? Why can't we get enough of him?
It seems like he returns. I mean, there's not been a biography of him since 1995, a full biography. But we do seem to need Hemingway. Almost every generation needs a different Hemingway. And I think personally it's because of the work. I think that work is stuff, is people can read it and connect to it in a way you can't with any other writer. Or much as in many ways I think Gatsby is better than anything Ernest wrote.
The Great Gatsby. Yeah.
Yes. I think that You know, a lot of people read him in school, and teachers love him because he teaches himself. You know, that it's there in the stories. And you do realize, the students realize that there's feelings beneath the surface of what is said in the story. And that's his iceberg formulation of his own work, that all you see is the tip of the iceberg, but there's all this stuff below the ocean surface that's informing what you see, and it's bigger than what you see. So I think that works on people, on almost on anyone who reads him. I also think, just briefly, that the culture seems to have a need for a super macho, bullfighting, you know, Marlon wrestling, shooting, boxing, hyper male kind of myth. And I don't know. And I obviously try to undo that myth about, I think the strength that I have as a woman is I don't have any investment in that legend. I don't really care. Or as I say in my book, it's not what I bring to the book is, I'm sure I have my own baggage, but it's not an investment in that legend, which I think marred all the previous biographies, and all of which were written by men.
That is Mary Dearborn, author of the new biography, Ernest Hemingway. She is in Atlanta tonight for a book signing at the Margaret Mitchell House at 7 p.m. Mary, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.